This is a Pinball News production.
In case you might think that I'm an independently wealthy dude who has money to throw into the collecting of these expensive things, I'm not. I've worked hard and have acquired these over the years. I love exploring old things, old equipment, and old machines. Take a look at these images of some beautiful mementos from Americana. They combine beauty of design with functionality of purpose. A Jennings 1929 Jackpot Bell. Three very rare uprights, circa 1900. A pair of trade stimulators from the 30s. Yes, these one-armed bandits hold a fascination for me. About 4 years ago, I was browsing through an antique store in Niles and saw an old slot machine. It was jammed and the proprietor had given up trying to fix it. I thought about it for a week and it went back and bought it. After about 10 hours, I had it working. My first mistake, buying something without researching the value and collectability. I paid too much for it. Furthermore, it was not a major brand. You see, there are five major brands of American slot machine. Mills, who made the most. Jennings, who had the best mechanism and clockworks. Watling, who built the most beautiful machines. Pace, who had some very beautiful and well-built Art Deco machines. And Kiley, that was known for their early uprights. But this particular machine that I had just bought was a Columbia. It is unique because it has an unusual payout mechanism, but because of this, parts are hard to get. Collectors either love them or hate them. It worked fine for 6 months, but then the real spinner exploded, and I was out of luck. Gretchen Manufacturing Company made their parts out of pot metal and not steel, so these machines can't be flogged. I was able to find a replacement part and had the machine completely rebuilt by Squires and Corey in San Mateo. So the first lesson in collecting or getting into any new pastime is to educate yourself before you make the first big splurge by buying a book or two. These books are expensive but are as beautifully produced as Michael Schauhub's excellent books on pinball. The first book I would recommend is Slot Machines by Marshall Fay. It was written by the grandson of Charles Fay, who invented the three-reel slot machine. The second recommendation is Vintage Trade Stimulators and Counter Games by Richard Buchel. This lavishly illustrated book also gives values, which you should multiply by three for today. Lemons, Cherries, and Bellfruit Gum, also by Buchel, tells a story of these machines using the advertising literature of the day. Slot Machines on Parade by Geddison Mead contains over 100 very high-quality photographs of fully restored machines. Finally, once you do purchase a machine, there are pictorially based owner's guides to help with maintenance and, wow, how did I get ahead of myself here? Oh, gotcha. Once you purchase a machine, there's guides to help you with maintenance and jammed coins. When I bought my first Wedgehead pinball, the decision was based on playing many machines, and so when a Sweethearts came up, I grabbed it because I already knew what I wanted. Unfortunately, there isn't an equivalent of Pacific Pinball Museum or Berkeley Max for slot machine enthusiasts to find out what they like. But right here in the Bay Area is one of the largest private collections of slot machines and coin-op games in the world. And it's not only open to the public, but it's free. Joe Welsh's American Antique Museum in San Bruno is about 2 miles from SFO. It's housed in a real estate office, open business hours only, and will blow your mind. He's got everything from trade stimulators to a room full of vintage upright floor models worth $100,000 each. In the East Bay is Antique Amusements, which is the only store I've ever seen that actually has old slots and trade stimulators. It's located in San Leandro and is loads of fun just to visit and poke around. And if you're actually serious, Jerry will let you play the machines. Here's a Watling Blue Seal. Here's a Roman Head with gold. plating. So once you decide, and here's some trade stimulators. Once you decide you want to get into this, I recommend finding an IMP trade stimulator, which can be had for well under $200. This has a simple mechanism which you can study and work on. Once you find yourself on eBay scouring trade stimulators and antique slot machines, you'll figure out in 6 months what these items should go for. Be sure the vendor packs it well with bubble wrap and double boxes it, because a full-size slot machine weighs about 100 pounds. Here's a Reel 21, which is like a blackjack game. I've got it here, which you can look at afterwards. Deals cards and tells what you have to beat. Of course, just like most of these things, the cards are stacked in favor of the house. The inside of it. So let's look at some items on eBay, and I'll give you some tips. Here's a IMP, kind of beat up. They want $100 for it, but if you look closely, it's rusted, and the paper is shot to hell, so it's not worth probably, you know, a dollar. Here's a little perfection coin-op. It's actually from 1927. 1575, that's about the right price for it. So that's about 90 years old. When you're getting into the teens and older, the parts are made out of cast iron, so you can't really flog these machines too hard. But, well, you just don't want to play them two or three times a night, but where's the, you know, like, the Golden Falls, there it's made to be played 24 hours a day because the parts are steel. And you'll never find parts for this again. Here's something called a Burnham & Mills trade stimulator, which vended gum and had a slot machine. The price, actually what it's worth, is about $2,200, so this is a decent price for it, but something I can't quite tell is about the case. It looks like it's either rebuilt, you know, it just looks a little bit too new, and the grain of the wood, especially on the right there, looks like it's suspicious. Now here's something. I finished this slideshow about a week ago, and this ended up at $550, but which actually is still a decent deal for this game, which is a very rare real dice game. It's obviously been repainted in an auto store. The way to paint any machine correctly, if you're refurbishing it, is it's where you put a powder, you powder coat it, and then they bake it rather than spray paint it. But looking inside of it, the paper is pretty dark. The paper gets dark like that when you over-oil the mechanism, and the oil sprays onto the paper and turns it black. But you can buy replacement paper. Actually, there's a guy in Daly City that sells them. Here's a suspicious thing, a Mills Cherry Running Falls. There's no such thing, and on closer look, you can see the jackpot is missing. Someone's really ruined it by painting the whole thing silver, so it's not worth 15 cents. After Mills sold out in 1951, Sega bought the rights to continue manufacturing the Vest Pocket up until 1970. So this is a good price on a very interesting piece. I've got a Vest Pocket here. They're a little temperamental, but they're cute, and they actually, you know, they're the smallest fully functioning payout slot machine ever made. So here's an operator's bell from 23, it says. Looks like it's been rebuilt, that is refurbished. It could be replacement paper on it. It looks really nice. I'm not sure whether the back is correct or not, because I don't know whether a plywood back would hold the thieves from, you know, plundering in the dark. But it looks to be the cash box is the right cash box, and there isn't a lot of rust on it. But it's actually a 1924 machine. If you look on the right, they up until 1929, they cast the date of the manufacture into the machine. This is something that's very collectible. Of course, you see the reserve isn't met. It's a gum vendor, probably worth about $2,500. Tells fortunes and vends gum. It's not a gambling game. It just vends gum. Now, this is interesting because you find things in the slot machine collection. Last year, they had some actual payout slot machine pinballs over in the show here. This is in really good shape and a good price for $400. I just don't have room in my house for another pinball game right now. But the paint is original. The electronics look minimal to fix. It nowhere did it say that it actually worked, but the paint on the playfield is really in good shape, so that would have been a good buy. Now moving up to the higher end, here's a four-star Chief. This is, tells you what you get on the high end for $4,000. This has been completely refurbished. This is what's known as a hunting scene from the 30s. And it's completely been, you know, torn down and replaced. That's just a gorgeous machine. But if you're going to spend $4,000, you might as well go for the king of slots, the Watling Rolletop, which is the, well, it's very, very collectible. You know, there are knockoffs of anything that's expensive. And let me see if I can go back here. This one is a 1945 model, and after the war, they actually used plywood sides, but the ones before the war were better built. And yeah, this is the I would never spend $4,000 on eBay. I mean, this is something where you would find it, I guess, and go back and see it. But this actually, this particular vendor is a there's about 10 people in the United States that rehabilitate these things, and they're bona fide. You're not going to get screwed by buying from them. However, it is a buyer's market, and you certainly don't need to pay that much. Here's a Castle Front, which is very common. You find probably three or four of these every day on eBay. This is one is particularly for $3,000. It's completely rebuilt by the same guy in Topeka, Kansas. But here's one for $789, the same machine. And it looks, it hasn't been repainted. It's original. There's a little bit of rust on it, some dents, the right coin box. And it says it won't play at this time. You can pull the handle halfway down. It just needs a new spring and greasing. But I can tell you from looking at it, the escalator is jammed, and that takes about 10 minutes. See, it should be... the coins are too jammed in there, and they need space for the mechanism to move them along. So that's a real easy fix. But unfortunately, it's pickup only. It's too heavy for me to lift. So somebody hopefully will get that. That was a good buy. Now here's something. Here's another thing that people put things, and they say that it's 30s. Actually, this is a 1956 Prima Donna from the Prima Donna Club. What happened is when Harold's Club went to buy new Pace slots. The Smith family was very conservative, and they got them, and they said, no, we don't want them. And so the Prima Donna Club bought them. And that's not to say that this isn't collectible. This is a nice machine, but you just have to realize any machine that has a light up front is from the 50s or later. And so, you know, it's not from the 30s. And last but not least, here's something that's, you know, caught my eye, a 19th century color wheel. It's like a horse race machine. Never seen anything like it. And scrutinizing a little closer, we can see why it's from Paris. It's made in France. So as intriguing as it is, and whatever the price went for, you'd never be able to get parts to fix it. So I bought this 1947 QT Hashmark about a month ago, and my questions to the vendor were, is the cash box original? These two cash boxes, the one on the left is original, the one on the right is more of a bin. Locks, are the locks original? Mills locks are worth about $50 a piece. Replacement locks are about $9.95 or $5.95 or something. Does the machine pay out correctly? Does the jackpot work? Is the paper original? See these reels. This is a case, another case where somebody over-lubricated the reels, and as the reels spin, the oil spins out and ruins the paper. And so fortunately, you can buy replacement paper, and that's what I plan on doing. This is the way they should look. And this is the mechanism pulled out. It won't be until you've gotten into this that you can learn to recognize such things, like if the reel brakes have been removed or the award card is an original or a replacement. You want to see if there's a serial number on it. Here's the award card, and it is an original award card. Is the serial number on the case corresponding to the number that's stamped on the back? And I always suggest, just through experience and from talking to people, that you stay away from dime machines, because dimes are really thin and they jam more frequently because of the smallness. So we'll talk a little bit about restoration. And there's an expression, a machine is only an antique once. So the question is, should I restore it or leave it original? In the case of the Golden Falls, because it was in excellent original condition, I decided to only clean it up. The cigarette burns on the base add to the patina. Just like the repainting of a cabinet of a classic pinball, it's your judgment call. But in the case of this 1929 Mills poinsettia, I had a different plan. So I'm going to go through some before and after pictures while I talk. You can see that as purchased on eBay for $1,300, it came from Camden, Arkansas. It was complete and rare because of the side mint vendor, marquee, and fortune strips. Everything was there, but it was filthy, rusted, and not fit for presentation. I wanted to take this machine back to the factory specs to show its original gorgeous beauty of the halcyon days of the 20s. I had a choice to either chrome plate all of the metal or buff the aluminum, which was the way it came from the factory, and that's what I chose, even though I'll continually have to polish it. It has a different kind of patina, a softer luster. The marquee card was dirty, but an hour in Photoshop produced a good replacement, and I put the original award card, the original marquee card behind it. The award card was incorrect, so I replaced it. As an investment, just like sinking money into vintage pinball games, these machines are an investment opportunity if you make the right decisions. They'll not only increase in value, but are also fun to play and add glamour to your home. A mechanical slot machine should be cycled, though, daily to keep it lubricated, just like people who like to be lubricated. Be aware, though, that there's reproduction slot machines available, which are manufactured today. These are pretty, but they're not collectible as far as an investment goes. Clues to how you can tell: no working jackpot, Phillips head screws in the mechanism, and no bolts through the bottom wooden base. Here's another, this is one that's manufactured in all over the place, because these are very rare machines, and here's what it really should look like. See the bolts in the bottom? That's an instant indicator that it's a reproduction. See what they say? Slot machines are remanufactured to the original state using as many original components as possible. Two original components. Okay. So when you decide a repair job, go slowly. When you start a project, remember that the parts are 60 to 80 years old. They might be brittle. Document the entire disassembly with photos, because 6 months down the line, when you thought it would take a week, you will have forgotten details, even if it seems simple. Generic hardware store grade springs won't cut it for slot machines. If the correct machine, if the correct spring isn't installed, it just won't run right. There's only a few people, I'd say about a dozen people, who know what they're doing and have the correct parts. Squires and Corey and San Mateo will blow your mind with their huge inventory of parts. Going into this place is like going back into the Twilight Zone, I'm telling you. It's real strange. I mean, I shouldn't say this, but he actually keeps his money in a tin can. He's very old school, but this place is interesting. He's got hundreds and hundreds of inventory of parts. He's been rebuilding slot machines for 37 years and knows what he's doing. Here's Steve working on a slot machine. You can see it's an interesting place. He's just like the poinsettia here on the end. He completely tore down the mechanism, sandblasted every single part, dipped it in anti-rust, and then hand-assembled it back into a working mechanism. So this is kind of a dying art. There isn't a very big supply for this, although there's a pretty big backlog in terms of about 6 month backlog. Trade shows. There's two major national trade shows. Chicagoland. Whoops, I'm ahead of myself. I forgot this. Here's just some images of some of the other people who build or repair slot machines and things. Here's a dice game, which is one went on eBay actually yesterday for $11,000. Here's the mechanism. It's pretty interesting because actually there's 24 preset dice that pop out there, but it has a little rattle in it, and it makes it seem like it's shaking the dice and spitting them out there, but it's quite an interesting thing. Here's an actual completely original Mills High Top. Bob Levy in New York has a lot of machines that he has for sale. Montana, there's a guy in Montana. I've talked to him. Pretty honest guy. He actually posts what the machines sell for, which is unusual. Most of these people want a kind of wheel and deal and finagle. Darwin's old-time slots. This is actually a slot machine that's very collectible, the Treasury. And here's the roll-a-top again with the coin front. Nation's Attic. This, I took some images of this because there's some interesting before and after pictures here of what they got and how they finished them. Here's a wolf head from the 30s, another roll-a-top, earlier Watling. So back to these trade shows. There's two trade shows, Chicagoland, twice a year, back in Illinois, and the Victorian Casino Auction in Las Vegas next weekend. If it wasn't such a long drive, it would be fun just to go down there and check out all the stuff. And then just for the really high end, here's some of the really high end collectible stuff. This is a roulette game, which actually there used to be one in the Bucket of Blood Saloon in Virginia City. I'll come back to that later. Here's a trade stimulator. These things are worth bofu bucks. This is a 1910 slot machine with a vendor on the side. See if you're going to get lucky. See what we give you for a nickel. Some gum and some trade checks. So for last year's Pinball Expo, I was asked to do a history of vintage pinball. Since I'm a filmmaker, it was my intent not only to show the history of pinball, but to show the context from which it evolved. You can see how these games of chance were confused with games of skill. This Bagatelle was repurposed to become a gambling game. Here's that roulette game again, and you can see how a pinball game was kind of evolved. This one was $800 on eBay. Once again, you know, who has that kind of money, even though this is an incredibly rare machine, one of a kind. Mills had a 1-2-3 game. It's obviously a slot machine, based pinball. No flippers, and you could only nudge the cabinet to entice the ball to hit the bumpers. Every time the bumpers were hit, it would advance the reels, which give payouts. And in the bottom, you can see the little cup where the money was surreptitiously deposited. Of course, there were lots of card games. I mean, bona fide skill games, flipper games, just fun games, but a lot of them had card themes. And this is why the authorities confused pinball with gambling. Of course, there were a lot of machines that were built, bingo games that were built just for gambling. When I moved to San Francisco in 1966, every single corner store and bar had one. There is one over at the Juju. That's this one here. It's Manhattan. So let's talk a little bit about the history of slot machines and wagering. In the 1880s, in different cities, in the saloons, Wheels of Fortune appeared, which often offered free cigars or drinks, but of course were tilted in favor of the house. In the 1890s, the beautiful heavy wood cabinet floor model machines, mostly based on the principle of roulette, were invented. These machines do have jackpots and pay out. This machine is, I mean, this picture is of the El Dorado Saloon in Sacramento, taken around 1900. 2 years later, another photo shows a very early pinball game on the counter. It's a Kiley Scheimer log cabin. Next came the countertop dice games and card machines. But it wasn't until Charles Fay built the first three-reel payout slot machine in 1890 in his San Francisco workshop that the slot machine was considered invented. It was called the Liberty Bell. Every function of this mechanism remained identical to most mechanical slot machines later built through 1950. His factory was destroyed in the 1906 earthquake, and he saved two of these machines. He rebuilt and continued developing gambling equipment until many of these designs were sold or copied by larger manufacturing plants back east. So here's Mills copied the Liberty Bell, and this is what it was, and then it evolved into an operator's bill. As laws were passed to outlaw these one-armed bandits, the manufacturers dreamed up various subterfuges to get around the laws. They added mint or gum vendors so the proprietor could say, "It's only a vendor that tells fortunes. It's for amusement only." These machines were found not just in saloons, but in drugstores and soda fountains. Another variation was in the way the machine was built. This particular machine is a QT. It weighs only 36 pounds. It could be hustled into the back room if the cops came. This machine actually is responsible for the expression on the QT. The reels are small, but the payout mechanism is standard. We've got one up here for you to look at after the lecture. The vest pocket is even smaller. It weighs only 15 pounds. It's actually the smallest fully functioning slot machine ever made. With a clandestine flap to cover the reels, it could quickly be disguised. This is one of my favorites, but it's very temperamental and should be played carefully to avoid jamming, or just learn what jams and get ready to fix it. Trade stimulators were even more surreptitious. By vending penny gumballs, the user got value for the money spent, which got around the law. The real symbols could be for drinks, cigarettes, cards. There were literally hundreds of these interesting machines with themes ranging from baseball, blackjack, horse racing, to craps, numbers, and poker. They didn't pay out. Since you collected your winnings from the bartender, it was exceedingly hard to prove that gambling was going on. Unscrupulous proprietors often fixed the machine by placing a bug in the reel so that the machine couldn't stop on the jackpot. The early three-reel slots were known as 10-stop machines, even though they had 20 stops on each reel. When you play one of these, the machine can only stop on every other cymbal. You might think, oh, I just missed it, but in fact, these cymbals were there just to egg you on. That's how they work. See, the reel is tied to a payout disc, and they spin together. The payout disc has a gear-toothed edge, which locks the reel once it stops spinning. See how there's only half as many teeth as cymbals on this machine? Okay, the odds on these machines are figured by multiplying how many cymbals can be hit on each reel. In this case, it's 10 by 10 by 10, which equal 1,000 combinations. In the 30s, the manufacturers went to 20 stop reels by putting a tooth for each cymbal on the payout disc, which equals 8,000 combinations. This is how the percentage of payout is determined, and in this case, it's 75%. So here's how the darn things work. A coin is inserted into the top. It goes through a coin detector, which includes a magnet to reject slugs. When the handle is pulled, it rotates a spring-loaded main operating arm while simultaneously cocking the entire mechanism. It lifts the reel stop arms away from the star wheels, raises the payout detection fingers away from the payout discs. Now the machine is ready to snap in action. As the arm reaches the end of its travel, the operating fork falls off the dog, the reel kicker spins the reels, while the timing bar, which is regulated by the clock, seen down in the bottom here, moves back slowly, causing the foot of each reel stopped arm to fall into a notch on the star wheel, stops the reel from turning. This timing action is referred to as the three clicks, one for each reel. The fourth click corresponds to the payout fingers being released to feel the discs for holes. If a payout finger falls into a set of holes, on the fifth click, and you can see the far one there on the... While I was taking this, I'd never hit a jackpot on this machine, and from the back it actually happened to hit the jackpot. And if a payout finger falls into a set of holes, this will trigger a spring-loaded slide to retract. On the bottom are the slides that are all spring-loaded on the front, so you can see how the tube feeds coins into the slides, and each slide holds a predetermined amount of coins, and those springs just kick back the right number of slides to drop the certain number of coins down into the cup. This one's interesting. You will die a hideous death with spats on and go to church Sunday. You really need the rest, so keep your hopes up till prices come down. Kind of Victorian humor. I love this stuff. So other actions programmed into the sequence include dumping of jackpots. And in the early machines, the jackpots filled automatically when the coin tube was full. There was usually a reserve jackpot because once the main jackpot dumped, it could take a while to refill. This eliminates someone being ripped off if they were to get two jackpots too close together, because the second one might only be, you know, half full. So in 1945, a law requiring a guaranteed amount caused the manufacturers to come up with what they called a guaranteed jackpot. That meant an operator had to fill a predetermined amount of money into the jackpot. And you can bring the lights up. Being as how many of these machines were in unsavory locations frequented by borderline characters, over the years many kinds of cheating took place. Spooning was when someone stuck a spoon up an open jackpot to keep the coins falling out the bottom. Wires were fed into the mechanism from the top with a lubricated coin on them to fool the coin detector and get free play. After-hour shenanigans took their toll, which is why the locks are still virtually foolproof, and the cases are lined with eighth-inch steel. The machine on the end weighs 105 pounds, but the mechanism weighs less than half that. The rest is the case. When I was young, my dad always would say, "Well, they've really got the screw tightened down on the machines. They're tight today." But this is a misnomer because there were no controls on the mechanical slot machines to change the odds or payouts. They're simply odds at work, and I've watched this over the years. One day you can put one coin in and walk away with 18. Another day you can play and play and play and get nothing. Gambling odds flow like the tides, and when you're hot, you're hot. In closing, I like to wonder where these machines have been. What kind of place were they in? What kind of action did they see? Were they part of a mafia underground speakeasy? Or were they at a gas station in a windblown desert town? The poinsettia on the end was a single machine in the men's clothing department of a general store in Alabama, or Arkansas, from 1929 to 1969. It provided amusement, sold mints, told fortunes, and probably paid for itself many times over. If these machines could speak, they would have some interesting stories to tell. So that's kind of my presentation, and if anybody has any questions. Yes?
Can replacement paper for wheels from a guy in Bailey City?
Yes, Bill Whalen, and also I think Antique Amusements in San Leandro has them, and Squires and Corey will be glad to empty your wallet also. But Bill Whalen, of course, get ready for someone to talk your ear off. There's always a trade.
For almost any machine, he has them?
Yeah. They're reproduction paper, but this is the thing he's gone into. He's got a huge collection himself, but he's gone into providing paper for all kinds of slot machines and trade stimulators. Yes?
Roll-O-Mint machines from Great Britain are starting to make some people have imported them here.
Oh, really?
How easy are they to maintain? And is there somebody here that can help us? Or do we have to contact somebody over there in Great Britain to figure out the machine?
Well, I'm sure anybody who works on slot machines could help you, but getting the parts might be a little challenging. I mean, Squires and Corey.
I do know a person that he got a Hershey payout machine that paid out a little Hershey candy bar.
Oh, really? Was that from the 30s or 40s?
30s, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a typical thing for that time period to get around the law. Yeah.
What was that place in San Bruno?
Oh, it's Joe Welsh's. Actually, I've got the card here. American Antique Museum. And it's on San Bruno Avenue. It's in he has a real estate store, I mean a real estate office. His sons run it, and he kind of just sits around and does nothing, but it's free. And let's see, 383 West San Bruno, and he has one of the 12 Liberty Bells, and it just room after room of incredible stuff. Yes.
You were talking about how the machines actually work. You mentioned the timing mechanism had on the real spin form. Is there some random factor that's applied to the reels, or is it quite predictable?
No, it's
reel spin form?
It's completely random. You want the reels, you know, unweighted so they spin. I'll open up the back of this one and show you, because the reel kicker kicks all three reels. And then there's just, see, it's the clock that stops one, two, three, and that it's completely random.
But is that clock always the same for every
exactly.
spin?
Yes.
So if you knew the order of the symbols, you could calculate what the next stop.
Well, that's what you're getting after something that they called rhythm playing. And some of the older slots from the 20s could be cheated that way, but then... the newer mechanical ones from, you know, from 1930 on, the bearings caused the wheels to spin, and they put little wire brakes on the reels so that they wouldn't spin the same place every time. Yeah.
Question.
Yes.
It's So in the pinball world, we have the database, the pinball database. We have Mr. Pinball Classifieds. Is there anything like that that exists in the slot machine world?
Well, no. There's eBay, right. But there, and then there's all of these. It's a little more a bunch of mavericks, I think. I mean, I think it has to do with the fact that slot machines are still seen as kind of illegal, and a lot of people really don't know that you can own them. See, the different states have different laws. There's Hawaii, Nebraska, Arkansas. There's five or six states where you still can't own a slot machine. And then California, for example, they have to be over 25 years old. And some of the other states. So there's different laws. And so people don't know. And no one has ever actually put this all together. Although I think there's somebody in, of course, Las Vegas who is compiling something like that. Because there's a group down there.
Some of the eBay listings for the modern machines tell you what states and how old they have to be.
Yeah.
But there's no internet database.
There isn't.
To see all the different, if you're looking for, just kind of perusing.
Well,
at all the options.
What I do is I just type in the machine that I'm looking for, and there'll be lists of stuff that'll come up, and some of them will have pictures. Actually, there is a database. There is a database, and I can't think of what it's called.
Just
want to
let you know we have about 5 minutes.
5 minutes. Okay. Thank you.
One website you mentioned, I don't know if it's Slots Montana or Darwin's Old Time Slots. You said they posted the accurate prices on it and showed pictures.
Oh, that was Slots of Montana.
Yeah, I've seen that. They're pretty thorough.
Yeah, and he says, I have 250 slot machines, and my wife says I have 249 too many. So, yes.
SkillStop slots from Japan.
Well, actually, there were SkillStop slots here, which is just, it's another ruse to get around the law, and they were buttons on the top of the machine, which you could just stop the reels on your own, thinking that it gave you a little more control, which actually...
Yeah, but tokens in, tokens out.
Uh-huh.
I've had federal officers... I have four of them, and I've had two federal officers and one local PD, and nobody's come to get them because I don't put a dollar monetary value on it.
Do you have them in your private collection? Or
they're in my private collection.
Are they? They're not pachinko games, then they're...
No, I got pachinkos. I got over 20.
Yeah. Huh.
The actual brass pin balls.
Yeah. I haven't seen those. Yes.
So I've seen people who like the Jennings and folks who like the Mills. Is there a particular brand that you prefer, or is there...
No, I happen to get into the Mills because they're well known. The Jennings have, just like I say, an incredible... The mechanism is the most precision mechanism. They're built to take abuse. The Watlings, they made some beautiful cases. By the way, I'm going to be moving these machines back over to the hall. So when we get thrown out, I'll go back over there. I'm in the far end on the left by the historical stuff, and we can continue discussion.
Slotdatabase.com.
Slotdatabase.com. Okay. There you go. There is a database. My old mind just can't remember everything. More and more, I remember less and less. So I'd like to invite you up to just look at these machines, and then I guess in 5 minutes, 4 minutes now, we're going to be moving back over to the other side.